right, and welcome to the Silicon Career Podcast, where I share with you conversations with Caribbean entrepreneurs that I find online and out there in the wild, who are using technology and very innovative thinking to launch all kinds of digital businesses. So whether they are solopreneurs or have a startup, they have been bootstrapped or are investor-backed, you're going to hear who they are and what they're doing. I'm taking you to that part of the Caribbean that's beyond the beach and going digital. I'm your host, Ingrid Riley, and I'm so happy to have with me on this episode, Kadian Preston. He's a CEO and co-founder of CaribShopper.com. Now, CaribShopper.com describes itself as an online shopping mall that curates the best Caribbean-made products. And of course, they promise to deliver them within 5 business days. So they're really an e-commerce solution for Caribbean merchants. And they say that it's the marketplace for the Caribbean-made products delivered to your door anywhere in the United States. So they're playing in this huge, huge, huge trend and this huge market of e-commerce. So let's get into this. Welcome, Kadian.
Thank you, Ingrid. And thank you, the team from Silicon Carib.
All right, beautiful. I am so happy to finally have you on the show. So let's just get into it. I described Carib Shopper there. Would you add anything to it?
Yeah, I think we're the marketplace for Caribbean-made products, and that's how we simply explain ourselves, right?
Right.
We are simplifying merchants getting products out of the Caribbean into the hands of consumers living away from home. Mm-hmm. And that's our goal and mission.
All right, cool. So what made you get into this business in the first place? Because I know that Carib Shopper started out with a different premise. And what you're doing now is somewhat of a pivot. Take us back to the original idea of what Carib Shopper was doing and what made you pivot into where you are now.
Thanks for bringing that up, because it's a story that's worth telling, right? So in 2015, my brother and I, we own a development shop in Miami. You know, we wanted to build a company that impacted the Caribbean. And we looked at e-commerce as a struggling area, one from our personal experiences with family members always calling us to buy this on Amazon or buy that from that company and drop it to their drop shipping or their freight forwarding company, to getting loaded up with stuff in your suitcase and having to take it down when you're traveling.
Oh God, yes.
Yes. So we started the company to solve the problem of making e-commerce accessible and convenient for Caribbean consumers. And the problem we were solving at that point was a simple integration with the major retailers in the US, allowing for Caribbean methods of payment to be accepted and for delivery and transparency of the cost of the goods with, you know, duties and taxes and GCT and all these other things that are attributed to buying a product internationally and bringing it into the country were resolved. And we were able to accomplish that. However, in accomplishing that, it's funny how you learn product market fit, right? Mm-hmm. When you do your study on the consumer and they say, listen, I don't know what product costs me before I go to pick it up at my freight forwarder. You say, all right, transparency is a challenge, especially when you hear it from everybody.
Right.
You know, payment is a problem, especially when you hear it from everybody that, listen, they don't accept my form of payment. Sometimes they block our IPs at that time, you know. Big major retailers weren't taking the risk on Caribbean consumers because they thought we were all scammers. You know, it's just a myriad of things. So when we took the challenge on, we started building and we built a middleware that integrated with the Amazons, the Macy's, the Walmarts, 150 major retailers, and we allowed consumers in the Caribbean to pay with their Caribbean form of payment. And also, if they didn't have a Visa, MasterCard, or even at the time we had We had integrated on the, what's the network called? My mind is slipping me right now. But it's the debit network through a partnership with NCB to allow QR and those kinds of non-Visa MasterCard branded cards to shop online.
Okay, yes, 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 yes.
And we also converted cash into credit at the top-up locations all over the Caribbean for consumers that were cash-based to shop online. We eventually, in 2 years, we were in 5 markets, Jamaica, Trinidad, Cayman, Antigua, and Turks and Caicos. And we were excited. One of the things that we accomplished, which fixed a lot of the challenges, but in fixing those challenges, we also learned that we created some for ourselves. One being with the transparency. We would see tons of traffic coming to our site, people would browse, people add an item to a cart, and after they saw what the true cost of their item was, they would then shop us with their local freight forwarder saying, hey, I can get this product, this laptop.
Right.
There's 22% duty on it with GCT.
Mm.
You know, what can you bring this product in for? And the freight forwarder would say, well, we can help you with the duties, or we can help you with this. But you have to come and pick it up. And, you know, if you become a regular customer, we can take care of duties for you. That's something that we couldn't do in a business that we wanted to scale across the Caribbean.
So right.
Issue number one.
Right.
While we did acquire over 1,300 customers in 5 countries and had a great impact in smaller islands like Cayman, Antigua, and Turks, that their duty and their GCTs weren't that high, so they didn't worry about the finalized cost. They actually appreciated the transparency. In the bigger markets like Jamaica and Trinidad, that became a challenge for us, right? And changing our model would have basically moved us into the category of a freight forwarder and doing a business that wasn't scalable. And we come from a tech background, so it created challenges where that was concerned.
Right.
The second challenge is that the partners that we attained, you know, through our affiliation through being a Techstar company and direct dealing with Amazon and all these guys,
right,
we realized that they were moving into the Caribbean on their own.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, interestingly enough, and I'm very okay to say this, Amazon partnered with Western Union to do cashless transactions from their knowledge of them going into the Mexican market, Mexico, and also with their interactions with us and how we did our transactions.
Okay. So
from us. And it's fine. We expected that when you start sharing data and start partnering. And we don't consider it egregious at all. It's just, they also learned that when they entered Mexico. So, you know, we were just confirmation on that.
Right.
But Jamaica was their next market and they accounted for 55% of our transactions. And while we built out our business plan, we always had what we call Project Grow Local as a part of our day one in execution.
And okay.
We felt that we needed to attack the most popular side of e-commerce in order to grow a strong brand to attack the side that meant more to us, me and my brother. But in reality, we were wrong. And in the end of 2018, we sat down with our board, we sat down with our team and we discussed, you know, our margins, we discussed the future of the business that we're in. Now that we're not only going up against the freight forwarders in the Caribbean, we're now going up against our partners, right? Who at the end of the day, they own the customer because somebody's coming through Carib Shopper at the time to go to Walmart or to go to Amazon and shop freely, right? So when we looked at that, we said, this is not a good use of capital. We need to be moving in a more profitable direction. And we made a hard decision that we were going to, wind down the business as we know it in 2019 and take a look at our options in Project Grow Local, because that's what really excites us.
And
when we wrote the business plan of Project Grow Local, it was exporting Caribbean-based products and helping Caribbean manufacturers grow, right? And, you know, one of the things from being, even though we are, you know, born Jamaican and we have a lot of friends and we live and we were considered diaspora because we're out of the country for 15 years, we stayed very close to our roots. And we saw so many small, you know, companies start up making amazing product. And coming from our background, so let me hit you with a little bit of background and tell me if I'm talking too much, Ingrid.
Please go, because, you know, you're telling the story beautifully. I mean, I couldn't have asked. I couldn't have asked. You're like answering questions that I was going to ask. I was like, oh, did he see my script before? Okay, all right. No, he didn't. But this is beautiful. Go ahead.
As it gets, girl. So, you know, background, I'm one of four. My brother Tennyson and I and my sister Deep, my younger brother Jaron, we grew up in a household where my dad was from St. Mary. My mom was from Lucy, Hanover, both having 9 siblings.
Right.
My mom dropped out of high school. Well, didn't drop out. She just couldn't go back to high school after probably third form. And my grandfather was a fisherman, but my mom moved to Kingston and, you know, started working at Woolworth. And when she got her visa for the first time, I think I was like probably 2 years old. My parents had just started their family. My father's a mechanical engineer. My mom said she's, you know, going to the States to work and take care of somebody's children and make a life for herself. So for three years, my mom lived in New York. She took care of a Jewish family's kids. And
so typical of us, yes.
So typical. But one of the good things of that story when she told it to me, because obviously I was too young to know it, was that the husband of the family really appreciated mom and he was in the textile business in New York. They lived in the city. And he started teaching her about the textile industry and giving her tools to help her with the next stage of her life, and was always mentoring without outright saying mentoring. And when my mom left, you know, they didn't want her to leave. She came back home. My mom started as a higgler. And I'm going to use the terms in that were used in the 80s. You know,
she's of course.
My mom jumped on flights, went to New York, buy products, LA, Panama, bring it back. And she was selling wholesale to Ansa's, Azan's, all those stores between Kingston and Montego Bay that were big department stores. She was doing it. You know, growing up as a lower middle class at the time, my dad worked at Seprod. He was a mechanical engineer. My mom, you know, starting her business. She really had an entrepreneurial mind and she was very strong. Like, that's my hero. I love my dad to death and he's a great father, but, you know, mom was the fearless hero.
Your mom was it, yeah.
And she was the fearless hero. And, you know, I remember when she used to pick us up from school and then say, oh, I have a couple stops to make. We would be like so pissed because my brother and I, we passed our CXCs and got into, not CXCs at the time. It was Common Entrance.
Common Entrance. Yeah, you just dated yourself, but go on through.
I'm certainly not one of these young entrepreneurs.
You're not a young whippersnapper, but that's okay. We'll put you in the category of youngish.
No, man, I'm prime. Let's put it prime. I like the term. I'm prime.
Oh, I'm gonna steal that. I'm totally stealing that.
I'm prime, girl.
All right, dude.
you know, my brother went to KC, which is my dad's alma mater, and I went to George's. So yeah, both schools had their, you know, various support for growth. But at the time when mom used to stop at Answers and tell us to take out the suitcase and walk into the store, and we open up the suitcase in the middle of the store and the manager comes and picks what she wants and the quantities and stuff like that. And always so happened we would see a classmate, you know, maybe it's an affluent classmate, and you'd feel embarrassed. And I'd be like, oh, mama, you can just trap me home and do this after. And she'd be like, shut up your mouth. And
you, this is what's sending your ass to school, yes.
Exactly. This is a school of hard knocks, right? So eventually, probably a couple of years into that, and mom getting some success as a higgler, she said, listen, and I remember she's sitting down one day at the dinner table with my dad, and she was like, I'm going to open a children's store. And my dad was like, all right, why? And she said, well, that's the one category that people don't, hello?
Hey, man, I'm here.
Yeah, that people don't curtail their spending, right?
Ah. And
kids are born every single day, and they're the most important thing to a parent. So she basically, with all her contacts, she opened a store in, it's not Mall Plaza. It's the
Tropical Plaza, Twin Gates. One of those sort of a midtown, yeah.
Tropical
Plaza in Kingston.
Yeah, man. Tropical Plaza. It was called Chucky Kids, and mom got distribution of Oshkosh Bigosh and
Black
Kids and all of these top brands into the store, and the store started doing well. She stopped doing the other business because the store was doing well, and I was, you know, as now a teen, I was in my teens and seeing the progression and just loving it and coming to the store every day and after school and working, doing your homework and helping out. Long story short, I remember one day my mom broke down crying, and this was the turning point, and this aided in the story that you're about to hear.
Mm-hmm.
A young mother came into the store, probably from humble means, and liked so many items, and when she came to the register, she couldn't afford it. And she walked away crying, which broke my mom's heart, because my mom comes from Hanover. If anybody knows what Hanover is.
Western part of Jamaica, yes.
Western part of Jamaica, as country as it gets, and she owns it all the way through and through. And, you know, so she knows what it is to be a young mom and, you know, going through that disappointment. So my mom said, I remember she came back home that evening. I was like, why are you crying? And she said, listen, I got to change this. I need to have clothes that all walks of life can purchase.
So
my mom, being an entrepreneur, fearless and innovative, you know, went back to her roots. My grandmother was there at the time, and she said, why don't you just get some seamstresses, and we make the clothes ourselves down here, and we sell it at a cheaper cost that everybody can afford, and the young mothers can afford who are not well off or not middle class or upper class. And she said, you know what? Same thing. So my mom quickly rented a house in Havendale, cleared it out, got all the equipment, connected with our old boss in New York, bought the text. He would buy the textile, ship it down. She wouldn't even have to jump on a flight. Because she was a distributor for all the big names, she would get the style sheets ahead of time, and she would make the same clothes, good quality, because she had the hookup on the textile. And she had great, and we started out with 4 seamstresses, got up to 8.
Mm-hmm.
And she would make the Chucky Kids brand style. And I mean, that
took off.
Yeah, that took us to the next level. You understand? And basically, over time, she started selling Chucky Kids brand to Anthony, what's Anthony's last name? They have the biggest stores in Mobay, downtown
Montego Bay. Okay.
What's his name? Pearson, Anthony Pearson. They own, anyway.
A prime brain.
So they're what Azans is to Kingston. They own that in Mobay. And still to this day. And so she started selling the clothes, and they became good friends. And eventually he said, listen, I want to buy your business. It's a great business. And my mom, being fearless again, said, all right, buy it. And, you know, they did a good partnership, and it was sold. And, you know, they still have a good working relationship, and everything was good. And then she went into her next business.
Which was?
which was a liquor distribution.
Yeah. So you got your insight into entrepreneurship from your mom. You're living it, breathing it on a daily basis. You saw her move from micro to small to the big time in terms of a process. You clearly also got a sense of what it takes to run a micro business or run a small business in a country like Jamaica. So you'd really kind of appreciate then. I can see that appreciation and where that spark and that what excites you most in terms of what drove you to pivot CaribShopper.com to say, you know what, we're going to focus on what, Caribbean, the best Caribbean made products for sure, and see how we can actually help to, have these micro businesses and small businesses and medium sized businesses take them to another level using the platform of e-commerce and take their products, not just locally, but of course, internationally. So you really, got early schooling from your mom and growing up in that environment. And that's certainly, and now because you guys are steeped in tech, you've had a couple of runs, around the track in other areas. So now we're at CaribShopper.com, which is really focused on, the Caribbean and e-commerce stuff. Can I ask you please to shut that reminder that you have going? Because it's been going on for a couple of times.
Sorry.
Thank you. No problem. So let's get back on track. So clearly Carib Shopper also was not your first rodeo. What were you doing before Carib Shopper?
So before Carib Shopper, that's a longer story, but I'll give you the cliff notes as best as possible.
Yes.
Got my first broken heartbreak, when I was 18 turning 19.
Okay. Right, on time.
Yeah, man. I said, you know what? I want off this island. I'm done. I want off this little island because I can't manage. So my brother at the time was going to Pace University, and I walked up to my parents one day and I said to them, listen, I am going to New York to go to college. I'm not doing UTech anymore. And that's what I'm doing. And everybody was in arms. They were like, so who's going to take over the family business? Two of my sons gone already. Blah, this, blah, that. And I'm like, well, I don't know what you're going to do, but I got to make my own. So my parents said, they're not going to support it. They're not going to help me financially to move to New York. If I'm making that decision and I think I'm grown, then I have to do it on my own. So I said, cool. I have some money saved. I had my first business at St. George's College, which I was the mixtape man. Me and my friend Dane Chin, we sold your Stone Love and your Silverhawk mixtapes for everybody's Walkman from third form all the way up.
Yes.
And so I said, all right, I'm booking my ticket and I'm going to register for school and I'm gonna start. So I moved to New York. And I registered at Hunter College and, trying to figure my way out, spoke to my counselor and they said, sign up for internships, it'll help you. And I said, I'm paying for school and I'm taking up student loans. I'm going to pay for school myself. So, very quickly, I got an internship in 1999 with Yahoo.com, just a step to the journey, right? Mm. So I got assigned to the desktop news department, which is now Yahoo Financial. And long story short, I'm in the lunchroom one day and the CEO at the time comes and sits down in the lunchroom, which normally doesn't happen. And we ended up on the line to get food. And I introduced myself, learned that fearless thing from all those experiences, walking into people's store and dropping a suitcase and saying, hey, this is what I have to sell, right? Talked to him. He said, come sit down with me and chat. He loves Jamaica. And long story short, the next day I get a message from him. He said, I come to his office. He said, for the next 3 months in your internship, you're going to go from department to department. You're going to spend 4 weeks at every single department in this company. You're going to figure out what you want to do with your life. You're going to have a full-time purview of it. And anything that the department heads need, you get them their coffee, you get them their donuts, you run. I was in the Empire State Building. We're on floor number 70 something. If they needed to run downstairs, you do it, but you're going to be a sponge and you're going to learn as much as you can, that you can know exactly what you want to do with your life very quickly.
And when did that happen? And how? When did that happen? And what was that number one thing that you learned at Yahoo?
The number one thing I learned was that I want to be a businessman.
Mm.
I thought I wanted to learn tech. I thought I wanted to be a chef. I thought I wanted to be this, that. But at the end of all of that, I learned I wanted to be a businessman and I wanted to do it in tech. Mm. And because in 1999, that was the tech bubble. Everything was blowing up. So yeah. My brother was a programmer. He was doing programming at Pace. I said, I don't have the patience of programming, so I'm going to do network engineering. So cool. I did network engineering at Hunter. And during that time, when I went back to the CEO and gave him my report, I said, I want to be you. I want to be a CEO. He said, okay. I said, all right, I like that. Good. You spent time in every single department. You want to be a CEO. Then every day you come here, you shadow me. You're going in on meetings and you're going to basically be one of my other assistants, but you're going to learn. And he actually did do that. It was probably the second best mentoring I could ever have. So when I graduated, he said, I want you to spread your wings. I would hire you, but you're too close to me and people envy your relationship with me. And I want you to see what the world is. You ever need a job, you can come back here. He said, but I want you to go out and start out fresh. And to this day, I still call that man every year, check up on him, see how he's doing. Long story short, I got a job on Wall Street with a trading firm at the time. And I'm doing their network engineering, learning trading platforms and building. And also with a little coding background, I had troubleshooting trading software and supporting it. And that, you know, parachuted me to becoming one of the youngest CIOs on Wall Street. Wow. 9/11 happened. I had about 1,500 traders under management and about 10 technicians and programmers and all of this crap. And I went through that whole ordeal right there, because I was in the World Financial Center. Mm-hmm. Shook me up for a while. Obviously, my next move was to move out of New York. And my brother and I, we started up in between that time where we were planning our move out of New York. We started up a company called Outbox Technologies, which focused on making doctors' offices HIPAA compliant. And we did very well at that. We exited that business. We moved to Miami. We started our dev shop. We partnered with some of the biggest developers at that time. And it was about 2005. Mm-hmm. And built that out. And now here we are. Wow. And in between, I opened a restaurant, failed at that, lost a lot of money, bought a lot of real estate, sold. So all of these experiences put together was confirmation that I'm an entrepreneur and this is where I need to be. And the partnership with my brother, which will always be my partner, is critical because we think differently and he balances me out. And I'm sure he'll tell you I drive him crazy.
That was, you know, but that's a good thing. It sounds as if you. So, what would you say is the thing, the number one thing that you bring to Carib Shopper, and you think that will help to drive it to further success?
So, if I'm not being Kanye, but I'll be Kanye because that's confidence.
Be Kanye, honey. Be Kanye. Be Kanye.
I'm comfortable being Kanye, right?
Yes, be Kanye.
It's deal making and vision. I think that those are my strengths, right? Mm. And being fearless, right?
Mm. What do you need deal making for regarding Carib Shopper?
Partnerships. We are, I can say Carib Shopper has one of the strongest infrastructures, bar none, out of all the e-commerce commerce companies in the Caribbean today, and I can back that. It's not something I'm going to say, and I know a lot of the players, we're all necessary. But today, I'm 100% sure we have the strongest infrastructure out today, and we're still infancy stages. But as far as infrastructure, as far as the partnerships that we have to make this scale and grow, we have the strongest today, and that came from being fearless. Straight up, came from being fearless.
Yeah. So you say you have the strongest infrastructure and that you're great at deal making and you definitely have a fearless attitude towards this. But what did it take for you to get Caribbean entrepreneurs to trust Carib Shopper, to bring their and set up on Carib Shopper? What did it take?
It took hiring a good team, first of all, with understanding the objective. Mm-hmm. And understanding that this was going to be a tough task. Mm-hmm. Because we made the decision very early that we were going to partner with the manufacturer. So we were only dealing with manufacturers, and we're not allowing resellers, or we're not dealing with distributors, which made our jobs harder.
Right? Okay.
But that was deliberate. And we knew it was going to be harder because of how Caribbean people think. Mm-hmm. And one, you don't have a big family name. My skin don't white. I'm sorry for saying it, but it's the truth. Anybody who's
do your thing, do your thing. Offended,
we said candid here.
That's right. Let's go. Yeah.
My last name is not a special one.
In That's the right. Right.
My skin don't white, and I don't have intellectual capital built in the Caribbean. While it might be built in New York, built in Miami, the connections, it might be built outside of the ecosystem. I don't have it locally.
Right.
Right? So it's all about who you know, who knows you, and what they know about you. Right. We know it, right?
Right.
So we knew it was going to be a difficult road, but we said that's the road.
With the greatest views.
For me, it is, because our goal is and a part of our mission is we help make the merchant successful. Mm-hmm. By association, we become successful. Right. So it's not just about selling their product.
Right.
It's not just about bringing customers to learn about their product. It's also to share with them data that helps them make better decisions on product, make better decisions on where they focus on, because we're not the only channel for them, right?
Right.
Where they focus on in their marketing, where they focus on in their working on distribution channels. Like, we tell our merchants where your sales are coming from. Like, you're getting a lot of traction in LA. You're getting a lot of traction in Atlanta.
Right. You know what I
mean? Because we know by building that trust and loyalty and that level of partnership, right, we become very sticky, and it's part of our moat with them, right? Not only that, but we pay in US dollars.
Right.
So paying them in US, and that was a heroic challenge. Again, very specific. It's not cheap for us to do it, and it's not easy for us to do it, right? But we do it because that is where we provide the greatest value. And our goal is make the merchant successful. By association, we become successful. And then the other part of our equation is making people who are away from home closer to the culture. So you will see our tagline is Caribbean culture closer. We're playing on three C's. Caribbean culture closer. That's it. Right. It's nothing else. Caribbean culture closer. And so we took the hard road. So it took us almost the entire 2020, when it was prime, again, time for us to be flying the gates and selling Caribbean products, because people couldn't travel, people couldn't move.
Right.
But what we have learned, what Tennyson and I have learned, and having good mentors around us, is that, you know what, let's measure twice, even three times before we cut. So
we
took the hard road, and we didn't launch into beta until November of 2020. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, that all that time, it was word of mouth, testing different market aspects, making sure that our product is streamlined, it's good. Mm-hmm. Quality is there. Fix whatever problems we have. We have problems every day. Fix it. Mm-hmm. Get it right. Measure the process. Measure the outcome. Measure.
Yes.
That when we turn on that flywheel, we're able to spin that bad boy and really crank.
That's fantastic. I'm sure too, you know, in all of that there you've had some sort of a, you even had your first failure that you experienced in the early days. Give me an example of that, and how did you recover from that?
Which one you want to hear about?
Give me the one that really kind of like punched you in the gut and is like, wow, really? You know, give me one of those. And how did you recover from that?
Okay, so I'll give you two different angles.
Mm-hmm.
So Outbox Technologies was a success, but
yes,
we got a gut punch.
Right.
And we learned a lesson.
Right.
And you can look at it in two ways. We could consider it a failure, or we can consider it a success. And failure, a lot of people measure success by money. I measure success by value, and I measure success by the outcome, right?
Yes.
So if you made, for lack of a better term, $500,000, but your real potential was $1 million, were you successful?
Gotcha.
Have to think it through, right? You really have to think it through in every single scenario. What is success measured at? It's not always measured in dollars, because money is cheap. And people look at me like, you crazy for saying that. But it's true. Money is cheap.
Yes.
Money is cheap, right? And, you know, we did Outbox at a time where the health system in America was changing. And we just, because I had connections into... As a young CIO, I got connections into what's coming down the pipe from big software vendors.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get software vendorship partnership and all of this. So we had two of the biggest HIPAA compliant software and hardware companies.
Mm-hmm.
They're trusted partner. So when the receptionist at the doctor's office, who in October 2002, every doctor's office was going to charge 10 grand a month until they became HIPAA compliant. All they told, and they dragged it out down to the end, all they told their receptionists, find a company, make us HIPAA compliant, get them to come out here immediately. And so we were on the websites of the major companies. We had the jurisdiction of Brooklyn and Queens in New York. We literally were just getting inbound calls constantly. And we could quote them $20,000 and they were going to sign the check. And that wasn't because of or us doing anything. It was just being in the right place at the right time.
Right.
You understand? So I won't take credit for us being smart. It's just being in the right, it's being in the right place, right time, and taking advantage of it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a partner at the time, and that partner, you know, saw the exponential growth. I mean, we went from, you know, I think 6 full time to 20 in like 6 weeks.
Mm.
Right? And you saw on our QuickBooks at the time, we were, you know, not being Kanye, but we're doing 6 figures monthly.
And, yes.
It was exponential growth, not caused by us. We were just present.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of our partner meetings, we forgot to do our trademark, and we forgot to do some big legal docs, right? Because we're a startup. We didn't know it all. We did what we thought was necessary.
Right.
And our partner at the time, who was head of sales, had his wife go trademark the company in her name, this and that. And then they came to a partnership meeting and said, hey, guys, so we're like, why is your wife here? Oh, well, we got to start paying our royalties. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Huh? What are you talking about? And, you know, that turned out to be, when we found out what was done, that was a very colorful situation. And long story short, you learn.
That was a hostile takeover. It was,
thank God, we grew up God-fearing. Let's put it that way.
Oh my! That you didn't kill his ass. That's pretty much what a long story short.
I did not say that on record. Not say that, but he's alive and well and kicking. So let's leave it at that.
Yes. What did that teach you?
It taught me, right, to know what you don't know and to be curious about everything, right? So you don't know the laws, but get curious, right? Get curious, find out. Make sure, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't think you're a know-it-all, and don't be afraid to get help, right? Because I had friends who were lawyers. I could have asked them before any of this happened, like, am I good? Do I have all my corporate governances in right? Mm. Am I on the safe ground here? Or do I have any holes? Could have done that. Yeah. I had friends who were lawyers who would have done it for me for free. But guess what?
You just didn't know that you didn't know. And as you move forward with Carb Shuffle, you know, we're now in 2021, and I know that you guys have taken on partners, you've taken on investments. I think it was a little bit over $1 million from a private equity firm headed by Zachary Harding. What made you take that decision? And you know, applying what it is that you learned from your failures and your successes, what really made you say yes to taking on extra funding and these people as partners to help you power you through 2021 and onwards?
So the business we're in is a front-loaded business, mm-hmm. right? And for all the people that are listening and don't understand what front-loaded means, a lot of people say it differently, but it takes a lot of foundational building. And it's you only start making money when you hit scale, which takes time, right? Not only that, but we have raised capital before, and we found that if you don't raise capital with investors that understand, you've just made a big mistake.
Okay.
And that was in one of my other lessons learned when I raised capital from partners who didn't understand tech. You know, they're from real estate background. They didn't understand the growing pains. They didn't understand the risk levels when, you know, they have always underwrote their risk on an equity, right? On a physical property or land or something that's attainable, right? Mm-hmm. So they would never understand the challenges around that. So you know, when you have that and you go into decisions and board meetings and you're butting heads over understanding, right? Mm-hmm. Then you'll realize, like, did I do the right thing in partnering with this? Did I, you know, because money is cheap. Right, you need the support from your investors.
Absolutely.
And so the reality is, the reason why I chose Zachary and Delta is, I'm going to tell it to you plain like it's Zachary. Mm-hmm. Zachary has a vision. It's less selfish. Mm-hmm. It's more purpose driven, and he's an entrepreneur and. His wife is an SME. Mm-hmm. He sat on Jamaica Manufacturers Association board. He's been spending time in the entrepreneurial space for a couple of years. This is his thing. And he gets it. He understands what we're trying to do. And he gets it, right? And he can provide value outside of cash. So the reality is, you know, we could have went with an SF firm who thinks that Jamaica and the Caribbean is just beaches and people chilling out and drinking and having a good time. And it's
That's just right.
And then you're never going to be able to explain them the growing pains, the challenges that it took you 8 months to onboard over 220 merchants, right? That it's painful, that it is challenging, that people have to know who you are and you have to kind of do a lot of selling of yourself. They're not going to get that. They don't know the Caribbean culture, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to run into issues where they think that we're we're not good operators and we're not
gotcha.
So my advice to an entrepreneur is if you have to raise capital, like really, really, and sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you just have to take what come to you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you have a choice, take a capital that's aligned with you. And you can tell by how you see them look at your business. They have to look at your business greater than dollars and cents.
Mm-hmm.
They have to. And if they're able to see your vision greater than dollars and cents, then yeah, that's the right partner to be with. Mm. Because they're vested like you, they're pregnant.
Yeah. So no, we're still in the middle of the throes of a pandemic. We're like almost ready to count a year. Mm. What's your gut feeling about the position and the future of carbshopper.com now and post-pandemic?
I mean, it's bullish. It is bullish. I believe. So history, I'll speak to history because I read a lot. History taught us that Alibaba,
yes,
grew and blew up in 2012 when SARS came out in Asia.
Yes.
The reason for that was it changed human behavior. It changed the behavior of traders going into China and Asia to buy wholesale and bring into other countries. They couldn't travel to that country anymore. So they had to do the next best thing.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, Alibaba was doing okay. Mm-hmm. After SARS, they blew up.
Yeah.
And this is public information. So
yes.
COVID is SARS, what, V2? So that means that we're going to blow up V2 times it?
I
don't know.
I like it. I like your train of thought and your line of thinking around that. Absolutely.
So definitely bullish there. And then I think we solve problems. So, you know, and then you take the realist side of you, right? And you say to somebody like an Ingrid Riley who's been in tech, and you said, am I a painkiller or am I a, you know, am I a supplement? What do you think our business is? And you really get their feedback and you tell them to be honest. So Ingrid, am I a painkiller or am I a supplement?
You're a painkiller.
Why?
Because the region has been living with this pain for years. The pain of the world not knowing, you know, that the Caribbean makes excellent world-class products, whether on an artisanal level or on a mass level. You're solving a pain in terms of you're helping entrepreneurs who create these beautiful things to reach bigger markets. It's a pain that you're solving because also these entrepreneurs need to be able to get paid and paid in the strongest currency possible and get paid in the fastest way possible so that they can thrive. So I would say that, yeah, Carib Chopper is a painkiller.
Okay. And that's really good coming from you because I know you'd tell me like it is, right?
Well, that's the reason why you're on my show. I've been watching you guys for a while. I mean, I know Tennyson that we've spoken about. I remember Tennyson more than I think I remember you because we all met in at Black Tech Week in 2015, and I've seen Tennyson more often than I've seen you. But I keep hearing your name, of course, from your brother Tennyson, and I'm just kind of tracking you guys. And every now and again, I check in. And,
right.
And when I saw the your turn, and when I spoke to Tennyson, and I saw the news out, I was like, yeah, I have to have Carib Chopper guys on my show to talk about their journey, to share the story. I like that. I love the fact that you have taken the difficult road with the better views, to really kind of showcase the best of the region to the world. 'Cause that's part of my my thesis as to why I'm even in the tech industry, why I'm even still living in the Caribbean, well, at least half of the year, why I'm still, you know, in this business that I'm in, and why I'm still doing this Silicon Career podcast, because we simply must show the world that we have amazing things to offer it. So, yeah.
Amazing, amazing. Just like that 11-year-old who boxed for everybody food.
Listen to me. That news this past week was amazing. Was amazing. Yeah, but let me wrap up. Let me ask you this one last question. What is the number one thing you've learned about yourself as an entrepreneur so far?
Good question.
The one question I ask you, and you're quiet there, Kalian. And you're running like crazy from the beginning of the inner side. It's really interesting. What's the number one thing you've learned about yourself as an entrepreneur so far? After all of you gone through, and you're in your prime right now, as you say, right? You remember things like mixtape, right? But at the same time, you're attuned with Kanye, right? what's the number one thing you learned about yourself as an entrepreneur?
That if what I'm doing doesn't align with my personality and with who I am, that I'm not interested in it.
Why so?
Because it's getting to understand myself and my personality. So mentorship was big for me, right? So I tell people all the time that when I retire, I'm going to be a coach of some sport to high school students or prep school. I'm going to be a coach because I want to impact the lives of others, right? Because honestly, if you look at my journey, I've been lucky enough to get impact, right? And that impact has affected me in the way of my success and my growth as a human being, right? And my personality is one that I like to bring value to anything that I'm doing. So if you look at what we're doing with Carib Shopper, I'm not mentoring, but I'm bringing, if we're successful, which we will be, which we are,
right?
I will bring value to tons of merchants. The team will bring value to tons of merchants.
Yes.
In ways that has not been done before.
Gotcha. And so
there you go. So the lesson in the key is understanding yourself as an entrepreneur and knowing what makes you tick and work and working through that. And that the second part is, and why I was quiet is like, what's important? I said, the important thing to me is being relentless. There is value to that.
Yeah. Persistent. Yeah. Persistent. Absolutely.
And I see that with you, Ingrid. You've been a solopreneur at this for a very long time, and
scaling now. Let me tell you, it's been interesting. It's been interesting because Silicon Carib is now part of a network that falls under my new company called Rebel Girl Media, and so and you know it's been interesting to take this journey to here. But yeah, but you know I appreciate your candidness. I appreciate your openness. I appreciate you sharing your story, Kadian Preston, who is the CEO and co-founder of CaribShopper.com. Much success to you and your brother Tennyson, Kadian.
Thank you. Thank you, Ingrid. The same to you.
All right. Thank you. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Silicon Career Podcast, where every week I'll be sharing with you stories about Caribbean entrepreneurs that I find online and out there in the wild, who are using technology and very innovative thinking to launch all kinds of digital businesses that are driving the rise of digital Caribbean. So happy that I'm taking you to that part of the Caribbean that's beyond the beach and going digital. And just a reminder, that Silicon Career Podcast and all our audio experiences from our events are available across nine podcast platforms, including Google, Apple, and Spotify, which just bust way in the Caribbean. And of course, we're listened to in over 45 countries. So if this episode provided you any value, be generous and tell a friend. Leave a comment and give us a 5-star rating on the platform you're listening to. Until next time, I'm your host, Ingrid Riley. Take care.